You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location this week in Matt's office, not at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. We're still in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we put on our suntan lotion and hit the beach for our top five favorite beach movies.
I brought my Speedos, Rye.
Oh, why do you have to say that?
The banana hammock.
Oh, man. This episode's taking a turn for the worse right
off the bat.
Oh, I hate it. But we're covering our top five favorite beach movies because we have a couple of awesome guests that are going to be joining us here in a little bit. John Otterbacher returning to the show. He's been on once before. And also coming to us from Skype out in L.A., Justin Naughton.
Yeah.
John produced and Justin wrote and directed a movie called Riff Raff.
Right, which is about Chicago lifeguards, which is like a scene most people probably don't know about, but it's a very tight-knit clique here in Chicago.
No doubt about it. They got some big names in that film, and it's coming out on DVD. There's a release party that's going to be taking place at Mother's on September 9th, I believe.
September 8th.
Yes, Matt, September 8th.
Yep, which is just a couple days after this is releasing, so... Get ready, folks.
Yeah, you're listening to this. Definitely get ready to come to Mother's and check it out. It's screening for free, I believe, at Mother's, and you can buy the DVD. Whole bunch of stuff. Going to be a lot of fun over there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tons of fun.
In addition to having those two great guests joining us, we also have reviews of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark that came out in theaters, and also DVD reviews of Win-Win and The Beaver, the new Mel Gibson film out on DVD. So we got a full episode here, Matt.
Yeah, as always.
Yeah, not to mention Cinema War and a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. Action-packed, Rye. Yeah. Action-packed.
So let's start off bringing our guests in right now. We got John Otterbacher and Justin Naughton. Welcome to Cinema Jaw, guys.
Welcome.
Hey, guys. What's up? Good to be here.
Yeah, it's really nice to be back on Cinema Jaw. Thanks for having us, guys, and thanks for showing Riff Raff some love.
You got it. You know, also, this is something noteworthy. Justin is our first guest via Skype, so you have that distinction, sir. Congratulations.
I feel so technologically advanced that I can talk to you so far from a distance. It's great.
And you look great. We got the video going. It's fantastic.
Yes, this is very high tech. You guys can't see it, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just theater of the mind, folks.
Well, you and John and Justin, you guys know each other. You go way back. When did you guys first meet each other?
Justin and I went to college together. And as I generally tell people, we were like the only two not super geek filmmakers in film school. I was a little bit older and had been selling cars. I was a little jaded, a little strange maybe. And Justin was on the basketball team.
You sold cars, John?
Oh, yeah,
of
course.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, well, hey, German cars, not just cars, German cars. Volkswagen, BMW, etc.
Top of the line.
Hey, man, you got to do it right. But Justin and I, neither of us really fit the mold of your traditional film student. It's not to say that we didn't love movies or want to make movies, but there were a lot of kids at film school who they loved movies. They loved watching movies, and I think what set us apart was we had different life experiences, and we were pretty serious about making movies. I think we're the only kids that come out of our class, anyways, that rolled out and made a feature. So,
anything to add to that, Justin?
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a real special special feeling that we have that no one else has made a movie besides us.
Hey, it's hard to make a feature film, man. I mean, other people made movies, but it's hard to make a feature.
Oh, there's no doubt.
No doubt about it. Now, Justin, like we said, you've made this movie Riff Raff, but John just mentioned you played on the basketball team. Tell us about the basketball really quick.
I always knew I wanted to make films and write films and things like that, but I was, you know, I got to college on a basketball scholarship. I'm 6'8", and you can't tell by...
We'll take your word for
internet.
It.
Maybe if I stood up... No, you guys can't.
just do a dunk for us.
I'm a big guy. I played ball my whole life, and I ended up going to film school on a basketball scholarship, and that's how I got into... You know, when I picked my major, I really, you know, pushed hard into making films.
And you were also a lifeguard, I understand, at some point growing up.
That was kind of the impetus of the film. That was my college summer job, was being a lifeguard on North Avenue Beach down in the city. And I just kind of found it a very interesting experience. The only experience that we had from TV or films as far as lifeguarding was Baywatch. We all love Baywatch for different reasons, but it wasn't like, you know, what I experienced as a lifeguard in Chicago. So I decided I'm going to give him my take on lifeguarding, and that's where Riff Raff came from.
Yeah, and being a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach, when those crowded days, I mean, I don't know how you can even keep track of any type of safety regulations.
No, we didn't. We were drunk most of the time. But no, it's
not true. Makes me feel so safe, man.
Yeah, no, you can feel very safe in North Avenue Beach or any beach in Chicago.
Is it fair to say that this is like the Clerks of lifeguarding?
Clerks was a big influence because I saw Clerks, and as much respect as I have for those guys, I thought, well, if these guys can make a movie, I definitely can. They can make a movie about their dead-end job, then I can make a movie about my college summer job that I'll never do again, you know. That was a big, definitely a big influence, you know, and that was in the 90s and early 2000s when there was a lot of on-the-street independent films coming out, and that's kind of what we decided how we're going to make this one.
And at that point of when you're probably talking to John about getting ready to get started with the production of the film, how did the casting go about? I noticed you guys got some big names in the cast.
Some huge names in the cast.
How did that come about, the casting?
You know, the casting was a weird thing. Justin was actually overseas. We were working from a distance together. So, I mean, we had made a film in college together and had a pretty good relationship. You know, we worked with each other and felt good about it. And we were working on Riff Raff kind of remotely. I had just moved to Chicago. Justin, where were you, man? Where were you when we were casting? Were you in, like, Switzerland?
Austria.
Or Austria. You were in Austria. So he's in Austria playing ball. And ironically, he's Skyping in today. We were using, iChat?
Yeah, this
we?
Is a blast from the past. This is exactly like how casting
yeah,
went.
We did this. We did this like, you know, yeah, we did this in, for Riff Raff for the casting a couple of years ago. And so Justin was watching the auditions, and I had headphones on, and I could see Justin, but they couldn't see him. And he would tell me what he wanted them to do, and then I would repeat it to them. Like he was
awesome.
Like the Wizard of Oz. He was the man behind the curtain. They couldn't meet him. They could only hear his words through me.
No, but that sometimes John would unplug his earphones, and he would let me talk to them. And that got really eerie for the actors because I didn't have a camera on my computer at that time like I do now. So they couldn't see. It was just a voice in the machine.
I forgot about that.
But you could see them, right? I mean, you had a video feed in.
I could see them, of course,
okay, okay.
Right? But they couldn't see me because I didn't have a camera on my computer.
But we were talking about the cast. I mean, it really is impressive. I mean, I guess the name that really jumps out at people, especially here in Chicago, is Robert Belushi. And yes, he is related. So I was just wondering if you could talk about how you got somebody of his stature to be in the cast for this movie.
Belushi kind of came in through auditions. We put it out to the agencies in Chicago, and his agent sent him over. We didn't request him specifically or. We didn't know who he was when we saw him. I saw him on tape for the first time, and I liked him without knowing his name. You know, you don't see the actors' names until you call him back in. So,
oh, really?
It wasn't somebody that we cast based on his name. We cast based on his talent, and he's you know, one of the shining stars of the film.
And you would never think he's a Belushi with the shape this guy's in compared to the other Belushis.
Yeah, man, he's cut up, at least in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know where he's at right now.
He's still in shape, though. No, he's a good-looking kid, and that's something that's helping him out a lot because he's definitely got the acting chops and the comedy chops. But he's a good-looking guy too. He could be a leading man. So I hope he continues to do what he did in Riff Raff.
I mean, he comes from good stock, especially you know from a Chicago viewpoint. So hope so too.
He owned that part of Otis. He came in and. He just owned it. And we, oddly enough, we actually had other people try out for the role who were related to famous people. It's not as uncommon as you would think, you know? I think we had an Eastwood in there at one point and somebody else. It was interesting. But, I mean, he just owned the part. I don't remember knowing his name. And we were just like, this kid's amazing. He talks like he's from Chicago. He understands the role. And that's what really got him the part. The fact that he was a Belushi was just a huge bonus, you know?
For sure.
That's awesome. And talk about filming. Did you guys film right down on North Avenue Beach or more secluded beaches? Where did it all go down as far as the filming?
We filmed exactly where I was a guard at, you know, all the places in the script. Luckily, this was only a couple years away from when I worked there, so I still knew a lot of people that were working at the beach. And that got us in, you know, where a lot of places might would have been a little leery or cautious of a film crew coming in. These guys knew me. They knew a couple of the other guys in the crew and cast were also former lifeguards. They gave us carte blanche at the beach. We were able to do a lot of things that even a Hollywood crew probably wouldn't have been able to do because of, you know, city regulations and red tape. But we got right down everywhere that I cited in the script was exactly where we filmed, at least on the beaches. You know, all the beach stuff takes place at North Avenue Beach. So if you know North Avenue Beach, you'll see this film. You'll love it. You'll recognize every single thing about it.
Oh, that's awesome. It's a must-see for all Chicagoans, especially because North Avenue Beach is a special place for us.
It's a staple.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Were there any near drownings while filming?
And a lifeguard movie? Well, they're all lifeguards,
the
man.
Irony. The irony.
Well, I guess the ironic thing would be that not all the actors playing lifeguards were actually trained as lifeguards. Or even were really trained as swimmers.
Yeah, that, yeah. Watch that, the swimming scenes,
which is not uncommon in any movie that the actors are not exactly good or perfect at what they're trying to portray. But like I said, some of the actors were former lifeguards themselves, and they kind of helped the ones that were not, that were just cast based on their acting abilities. And when you see the scenes in the film that have to do with the drowning and with lifeguards jumping in the water. You can definitely tell the ones that jump in are the real ex-lifeguards or very strong swimmers because we weren't going to risk any actors' lives by just throwing them in the water.
Yeah, especially on Lake Michigan, man. It's treacherous.
A few of them, if you watch some scenes where people are in the water, there's a few people that they shouldn't be in the water or they shouldn't be in the water for extended periods of time. They're terrible swimmers. They portrayed lifeguards very well, but not great swimmers.
It's kind of scary.
You know, you don't see it in the
film. Are you talking about the real lifeguards?
No, the real lifeguards were excellent. A lot of the actors are played by real lifeguards. And then
right.
A lot of the characters, exactly. And some of the characters are played by people who've never been in Lake Michigan before.
Gotcha.
And you can kind of point them out. There's a couple scenes where they're swimming off in a different direction or flailing wildly.
Doggy paddling.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. We cut most of that out, the magic of editing, but yeah.
Now, when I go home and I scour over my screener of Riff Raff, can I look and see Justin or John in the film? We got a cameo, guys?
Can you see John? Is John in the movie?
Yeah, does he got a cameo in there? Like you got a cameo in there, Justin?
I'm definitely in there as a cameo role. If you can find me, I don't know, what kind of prize should I... We should throw some money down on this. If you can pull me out of the movie, I
steak
think that's...
dinner with you.
Well, I don't eat steak.
You're going to be buying a lot of steak dinners. Go, Meager.
Bacon and steak dinner, and you can eat zucchini and broccoli.
You heard it right there, jawheads. Try to find John Otterbacher in this film.
Yeah. How about a beer? How about a PBR, John?
Yeah, you know what? I'm definitely down. If you can find me in the movie, especially the night of the screening, I owe you a beer at the very least. But I'd be surprised. Justin, on the other hand, he's pretty easy to pick out, I think, especially if you think about his career as a basketball player.
Ah, yes. A clue right there.
Yeah,
I cast myself as one of the bosses of the lifeguards.
Only because he was right for the role.
It's not one of the main characters, but it's definitely a supporting role. And the reason I did that is because when I was a lifeguard, I never got higher, and I never got promoted higher than a lifeguard, and that was always my dream. So when I made a movie, I had to promote myself in the movie.
Well done.
Yeah.
Kind of fulfill a dream.
Yeah, you got to live out your rock and roll fantasy.
Has nothing to do with him wanting to be an actor at all.
Not at all.
No.
I would be remiss in my duties here if I didn't ask this one question. Whose ass is it on that poster that is so attractive?
That's one of the other stars of the movie. Her name is Katie O'Hagan. She's a very, very talented actress.
Reno,
she's one of the main four actors in the movie.
Reno was leaning over to check out the posterior in question.
And now you guys had the premiere over at the Gene Cisco Film Center, is that correct?
Yeah, the Gene Cisco was fantastic. They're great about supporting local indie films. We'd shown them Riff Raff. There's actually a little bonus feature on the DVD that takes place at the Gene Cisco Film Center when we premiered there, and people can see how the premiere went and a little feedback from some people at the Gene Cisco Film Center. So even though it's kind of a young person's kind of coming of age party movie, it's definitely a good time. The Gene Cisco Film Center is I think a lot of people have this idea that they're kind of laced down, and that's not the case at all. They show good films no matter what the genre or age group, and they welcomed us, and we had a great time. We screened there for a week. We did a lifeguard costume contest. We sold out the red carpet premiere. It was great, and I couldn't ask for a better place to screen a film. I'm looking forward to screening at Mother's, though, too. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Different vibe, but equally fun.
Yeah, again, the screening is September 8th at Mother's. It's the DVD release party of Riff Raff. We're here with John Otterbacher, producer, and writer-director Justin Naughton.
On Skype from L.A.
Absolutely.
That's right, via Skype.
And we always end our interviews, we're going to throw these over to Justin since John's been on before, with some cinema cues, we call them. Get to know the guests with some goofy movie questions. Justin, who would you rather have as your co-pilot, Chewbacca or Goose from Top Gun?
Man, that's a tough one.
These are the ones that keep you up at night, I tell you.
It's got to be Goose. Word. I'm a beach volleyball fanatic, and I like to just take my shirt off and go to the beach and spin on my finger a lot. No, wear golf jeans. And,
Wait. So. Chewbacca could spit on your fingers.
Chewbacca wouldn't do so well in the beach, you know what I mean? I think he would sweat a little bit. I think he would just be asking for water the whole time, you know, with all
sand
that hair.
In his fur, yeah.
Although he is tall.
He does have that going for him.
On the net.
No doubt about it. But he might eat the volleyball. You never know with Chewbacca. Question number two over to you, Justin. Who would you rather have over for dinner, Hannibal Lecter or Patrick Bateman from American Psycho?
Oh, man. Lecter or Bateman? I think that I'd go with Bateman because like Bateman in Psycho, I like to run around naked with a chainsaw. Just, you know,
who doesn't?
Having fun with the various dates I bring home. And I think that me and him could swap stories.
That's awesome right there.
Yeah, and looking at you here on Skype, I can kind of, I don't want to say imagine you naked with a chainsaw, but I can see you doing that.
All right, Matt. just awkward. Very awkward.
Awkward.
Turn this guy into a whole new different show.
I know.
Last question over to you, Justin. Let's say they're remaking Pretty Woman and your cast is Edward. What actress today would you cast as your Vivian Ward?
Tough one. Man, I don't know. Susan Sarandon? Is it an age limit?
No, you can say whoever you think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of liking the older actresses. You know, I'd go with Meryl Streep, Susan Sarandon. You know, these new girls today, they're not classic enough. You know, they're not classy. You know, those girls can play whores like anyone else.
I like it. Going with the Cougars.
Yep, I like it. So Justin and John sitting in on this whole episode of Cinema Jaw, and brings us to a segment we call Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore on a new film opening up in theaters. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
The new 400?
Yes, they are, Matt. The new 400 theaters in Chicago, they are up in your neighborhood, Rogers Park.
That's right. And they're just literally steps, about two blocks, actually, so it's not steps away from the Loyola Red Line stop.
And the best thing is, Matt, they have a full liquor bar at the theater, so you can get your beer, get your drink, get your cocktail, and enjoy a film.
And they have the best prices for first-run movies anywhere in Chicago.
Yeah, so check out what's playing at the new 400 at www.thenew400theaters.com.
And we thank them for their support.
All right. The new movie opening up, Eye for an Eye, is Contagion, an action thriller centered on the threat posed by a deadly disease and an international team of doctors contracted by the CDC to deal with the outbreak. The film's large cast consists of Matt Damon, Kate Winslet, Gwyneth Paltrow, Jude Law, Marion Cotillard, and Lawrence Fishburne. And the film is directed by Steven Soderbergh. Matt, interested or ignore on Contagion?
Haven't they made this movie like five times already?
I think so.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of interested based on the cast.
Justin, interested or ignore?
Unless the monkey from Outbreak is going to reappear, I'm not really. I'm going to ignore it.
We throw it over to John. Interested or ignore?
I'm always interested in what Steven Soderbergh is doing. I'll be honest, I haven't seen his last couple of movies, but this is a guy, you know, I kind of grew up as a filmmaker on, and this cast and Steven Soderbergh at the helm, I'm down. I want to check it out.
Rye, break the tie.
I'm going to join John with this one. I'm also interested, not overly interested. But when I first read about this film, I was super excited with the cast and knowing that Steven Soderbergh was behind it. But like you've mentioned, Matt, haven't we seen this before with Outbreak and a few other films? But I think he's really going for...
Quarantine.
But I think what he's really going for is that it's the fear that sort of spreads amongst the society, and that's the true evil, not actually the disease that is being spread. And I like to see what he'd like to do with that.
They call that subtext in the biz, right?
Yeah. Beautiful.
Well, he's on his way out. Soderbergh keeps threatening to quit.
He does.
He's made some great movies, but he keeps saying he's going to quit. Like, this may be not his last movie, maybe his second-to-last movie. So, I don't know. It's a little anticlimactic, but, I'd like to check it out.
Not to beat it over the head, but don't say you're going to quit. Just quit. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
Don't threaten us with it.
Can you hear that, Jay-Z?
He's listening.
Yeah. So we got three interesteds, but they're all sort of slight. Nobody's super excited about this one. One ignore on Contagion. A new movie I did get out and see, Matt, you were super excited about was Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Katie Holmes and Guy Pearce star in this new spooky film that's written by Guillermo del Toro, and it's based on a TV film from 1973. It also stars Bailey Madison, who plays Pierce's young daughter, who comes to live with him and Katie Holmes in the mansion that they are restoring. The young daughter discovers small creatures living in the house and at first looks to befriend them as she feels lonely. What she does not know is that these small creatures are evil and they need children's teeth to stay alive. The film starts off with a lot of promise,
Matt.
3.5 jaw range. I was super excited, but it slowly runs out of suspense and runs out of scares and slides in at about 2 jaws. My main complaint being that they showed way too much of the little creatures. Eventually, I did not find them to be scary at all. The story being very basic does not leave much suspense. Skip this one or rental at best. Ride the Movie Guy's grade. 2 jaws, a grade of a C.
Well, it sucks, man. It had so much potential.
It did. Del Toro behind it. And it started off, I love the idea of instead of just moving into some old creepy mansion, he's actually restoring it and they're getting it ready for Architectural Digest. So it had a little bit more tie-in and more realistic feel for why they were living at this place.
Sure.
The girl was creepy. The creatures at first were creepy, but after a while...
They hit you over the head with it.
Yeah. They're on screen way too much.
Yeah.
I mean, give us a little bit more Jaws feel and not show the creatures so much.
Less is more.
Yeah. I'd always like to do parents... If Don't Be Afraid of the Dark had parents, they would be Gremlins and Amityville Horror.
Strong parents.
Yeah. Doesn't always mean a great child, though.
Doesn't always mean a great child.
And Don't Be Afraid of the Dark's in theaters, but it has nothing to do with the beach. And our top 5 beach movies, because of Riff Raff DVD party on September 8th at Mother's, our top 5 beach movies are sponsored by...
Evil Squirrel Comics.
Whoa, where are they located, Matt?
6928 North Glenwood Avenue. Again, steps from the Morse Red Line stop.
That's awesome. And the best thing about Evil Squirrel Comics is if you go to their Facebook page and hit like it, you get 10% off your order.
That's right, on their Facebook store. And this just in, they just for all you jawheads that are overseas or in another part of the world, you're not in Chicago, you don't have to live in the dark age. You can get your digital comics at the Evil Squirrel Digital Store, and there's a link to it right on the Cinema Jaw website. Click on the Evil Squirrel banner, go straight to their digital store, and order some comics, because who needs paper anymore, right, Rye?
I agree. So definitely, we thank them for their sponsorship. Definitely check out evilsquirrelcomics.com.
They're the best.
All right, so our top 5 beach movies, we got to go quick because we got 4 lists of 5. I'm going to get us started off
blaze.
Right here.
Let's blaze.
I'm going to get us started off right here. This is a guilty pleasure. It came out in 2000. It's not the greatest film, but it stars Leo DiCaprio. I'm talking about The Beach. Am I catching any riff-raff for that right there?
That was on my bottom 5.
All right. You know, I think when I first saw this, I didn't really care for it too much. But I love going back and watching a film that I get to know the director a little bit more as their career progresses. And I got to know Danny Boyle a little bit more. I like his work. And it was actually fun to go back and see this film and see sort of a younger Danny Boyle coming to age. Also, a great early performance by Tilda Swinton in there as well. And DiCaprio's DiCaprio. He does a pretty decent job.
It's a beautiful movie. I mean, beautiful in terms of cinematography. Story leaves a little bit to be desired. Love Danny Boyle, but yeah, sure. Yeah, that's pretty.
What do you got at your 5, John?
I'm going to go with a weird one. I've been kind of on an 80s kick lately. I'm going to throw out the Summer School.
Ooh, nice pick.
Yeah, I have not seen this one in a long time.
Oh, I like
that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good flick, you know? I mean, Mark Harmon and what's her face from Cheers?
Kirstie Alley.
Kirstie Alley. Yeah, Kirstie Alley when she was hot. It's been a while. But I love Mark Harmon throwing it's like the head of a Cabbage Patch doll. He throws it on the beach and the dog chases it. I don't know. I can't get enough of that. I mean, I'm a sucker for dogs and weird stuff, but I think about that movie all the time, man.
The scene where the dog loses that toy was up there with when Tom Hanks loses Wilson in Castaway. So.
Whoa.
Better.
It's up there. Up there.
Better. Wilson. Better? Who cares about Wilson? That dog was sad.
Hey, he was sad.
It's
sad dog.
Second.
Justin, it swings us over to your number 5.
I cheat on number 5 because I got a penchant for surfing documentaries, so I included a couple for my number 5. because documentaries, you know, are just kind of half films anyway.
Tough crowd.
Slow down.
Take that, Morgan Spurlock.
I've made a few docs. Like Step into Liquid, Endless Summer, some great surf documentaries, you know, that are beach movies, but not so much fun and in the sand, like kind of comedy type stuff. But I got a penchant for surf documentaries. Unsalted is a great one. It's about surfing in the Great Lakes. It was done by a guy named Vince Dorr up in Grand Haven, Michigan. He talks about surfing. The surf season in the Great Lakes is September through like December. So there's people that actually surf like in Lake Superior amongst the ice in December in like full body wetsuits.
Nuts.
And he did a documentary about it. It's pretty awesome.
Awesome. So that's your cue tip right there, Matt. That one sounds awesome. Put it on your cue.
Yeah.
What do you got at number five?
1987's Back to the Beach. I don't know if this is higher on somebody else's list, but Frankie Avalon, Annette Funicello, arguably the icons of the 60s era beach movie, and they take it, like the title would tell you, back to the beach. Pee Wee Herman does an amazing cameo in this. The band Fishbone is there playing live, and it's really sort of a tongue-in-cheek nod toward a tongue-in-cheek genre, and that makes it meta, so in my book, it's good.
Beauty, Matt, beauty. No buzzer for you there.
Awesome.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Swings us into our fours, and at number four, I have a film. I don't know what it's even doing on my top five beach movie list now that I look at it, but I think it was because I thought this is a sequel, and I thought it was going to fail after the first one. I'm talking about American Pie 2.
Fail.
Justin, you also a fail? Do I got three fails in here?
I don't know. It was all right. You know, it could have been worse.
Yes.
It could have been worse. Could have been American Pie 4.
Been a D plus.
Well, you know what? I think, honestly, after the first one night, I saw they were coming out with the second one. I thought, oh, this is going to be terrible. But it really wasn't. I found it just to be as good as the first one. And it takes place at a beach house along Lake Michigan, so it's sort of a Midwestern beach movie. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they didn't even come to West Michigan. They came and shot, like, one day there. They came and, like, did some helicopter shots, and they went back to L.A. to shoot the rest of it.
The only reason I don't mind that movie that much is because that's kind of the same audience as Riff Raff. So if you like that movie, I think you'll really like Riff Raff. But if you don't like that movie, you'll still like Riff Raff 2.
And Riff Raff 2 is you know, it's on its way. So
you heard it here first on Cinema Jaw. Swings us over to John's number four.
I got kind of a weird number four, and I think it's because I saw Fright Night last week. I'm going to throw out Lost Boys. Santa Monica, California.
Are we doing vampire movies?
They don't spend a lot of time at the beach, but, you know, there's the whole, like, Carney by the sea.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, they're on the cliffs. The vampires are on the you know, yeah, maybe it's a stretch. I don't know.
We'll give it to you.
I like Lost Boys a lot, though.
Yeah. You just had to sneak Lost Boys in there.
I like it. I like it. Still not as strange as Fook putting in Das Boot for Christmas movie. swing it over to Justin.
Can I just say, my next favorite beach movie is Goodfellas. is that one scene that takes place. Lost Boys? I don't think there's one scene in Lost Boys in the beach. I don't know. Go ahead.
The whole carnival is on the beach, man. They're in Santa Monica.
It's close enough.
And the cliff, they're in the they live
First
in the
of all,
cliff.
Santa Cruz, you're right.
All right, Santa Cruz, my bad.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, Justin, wash our palates clean. What's your number four?
My number four is Private Resort with Johnny Depp.
Oh.
I have not seen this.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's my second.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like him and the guy from Numbers.
I love Numbers. I watch it every never.
Numbers is pretty great. Listen to me right now. That's a great show. Best writing ever. Private Resort, they like pose as like these rich kids to kind of get girls at this. It's really not the. Let's move on.
All right. Matt, you're number four.
I got a classic here. I'm going to redeem this whole list for Summer Rental, 1985 John Candy vehicle.
Oh, that's a good one. John Candy, yeah.
It's a laugh riot, and I use that term because this is probably the film that coined that term. You know, he gets a summer rental house out in the, you know, Hamptons or wherever the heck he goes, and nothing is as it should be. Everything is falling apart and dilapidated, and his hot tub is just an iron, like, little tub he has to sit in, and it's funny. It's John Candy. I mean, You guys seen it.
No, I agree.
I it's been a long time since I've seen it, but God, I agree with you, Matt.
I probably haven't seen it since 1985, but doing the research, I remembered it, and I'm like, oh, my God.
It's a must.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, I want to see it. I've never seen this.
You should.
Put it on your queue. Put it on your queue. Swings us into our number threes. I come heavy with this one, Matt. Redeeming my first two. Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze, Point Break.
On my list, you son of a...
Awesome.
I really hate you right now, man. I had that was my number one.
Nice.
Really? It was my number two.
Well, you know, it was directed by Kathryn Bigelow, who won the Oscar for
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker, right.
Nice.
And fantastic. The surfers out on the beach. This is a must stop and watch some of it. And let's not forget one of the best chase scenes ever on foot. Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze. Fantastic.
Swayze, enough said. I mean, it's genius.
Yes.
you know, one of my favorite cameos from Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers is in this film. So
yeah, definitely. That was number three on mine. Swings us over to John's number three.
My number three, it's reminiscent of earlier in the show, actually. I'm going to throw Top Gun down.
Again, this is not a beach movie.
It is a beach movie. There's volleyball. They're on the beach. There's long, dramatic music.
Yes, it's mainly about fighter jets.
Yeah, but they're on the beach and they play volleyball.
Okay.
It's a stretch.
The whole thing has to take place on the beach. You didn't give me these rules.
Well, it has to mostly take place on the beach to be called a beach movie.
I thought beach, and I thought Top Gun. I don't know what to tell you.
All right.
Hey, beautiful. Swings us over to Justin's number three.
I can't get over that John just took any movie that he likes with a beach scene and puts them on his list.
Didn't put a lot of energy into this, I'll be honest.
He's phoning it in, folks. Right. Save him. Save him, Justin.
I got one for you. There seems to be a theme about that 80s had a lot of good beach comedies. I'm going with Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise.
Nice.
Oh, sweet.
Excellent.
All right, good.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time, but that was a fantastic movie.
This is the movie where Ogre becomes a nerd and he starts to...
Ogre, it does. Yeah. He puts the glasses on. He switches teams.
That's right.
In his own way.
And Great pick.
The tank coming out of the ocean with all the nerds on it. That's an iconic movie moment.
Yes. Yes, it is.
All right. So that brings us to my number three?
Yep.
All right. I'm bringing out the heavy guns here, and I'm sorry if I'm stealing anybody else's number one, but Tom Hanks' Castaway is my number three.
Ugh. No, I agree with you. I got it sitting at number two. It was next on my list right here too, Matt. It's fantastic. Tom Hanks in a volleyball for 35 minutes.
It was between this and and Lord of the Flies because I had to have one horror beach movie in there and not Beach Blanket Psycho or whatever the heck that was, Psycho Beach Party. But I'm going with Castaway because it's not a horror movie per se, but it's got some darkness to it.
Yeah, it definitely does.
It's not bikinis and suntan lotion, you know?
And it's got one of the most horrific plane crashes in film history.
Yeah, outside of the TV show Lost, for sure.
Yeah, it's right up there.
No love. Castaway's put me to sleep.
Oh,
he talks
on
to a volleyball the whole time.
That's what makes it interesting.
No.
It does.
No, and Tom Hanks has not been good since Big. Sorry.
Tears in my eyes when Wilson went off to the ocean. To the volleyball.
That kind of sucked.
for an actor to convince us so well that an inanimate object has a personality to the point where we feel bad, and most people felt really bad, John. I know you don't have a heart, so you didn't feel that way.
No heart.
But right, you're alone on that.
$200 million on Tom Hanks hanging out on the beach talking to a volleyball. Nothing. No.
Oh,
did
man.
Nothing for me.
Tractor in the mud.
Whoa.
Nothing.
No. Listen. Sound design was great. Still put me to sleep.
That was Matt's number three. It was my number two. Swings us into our twos, and my number two was Castaway. John, what do you got at two? What do you got that was better than Castaway?
Well, since you asked, I'm going to throw down One Crazy Summer. I think it's an overlooked Cusack movie, and I don't know. I'm a huge fan. Nobody knows about this movie. He hangs out on
the
island.
That's a great one. I wish I'd have picked that for mine.
That's right a on. Great pick, honestly.
It is. It is a great pick.
Better than Castaway, I'm not sure, but that's a great pick.
Yeah. A lot of these beach movies, I just haven't seen them in so long. They're popping up. It's like, oh, I forgot. Right, One Crazy Summer.
It'd
been
be
a long
nice
time.
If somebody would make some good beach movies. I'm thinking a zombie beach movie.
You mean besides Riff Raff?
You guys see it.
Riff Raff? What's that about?
All right, so that was John's number two. What do you got at two, Justin?
All right. Since you stole Point Break at number one, I'm going to move my number two to number one. And for my number two, I'm going to throw in The Blue Lagoon because I just thought of it with Brooke Shields. Remember that one?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
A lot of skin in that movie.
A lot of skin and kind of weird if you watch it and you're older than 15.
Indeed, yes.
A little disturbing. Not much acting going on, but yeah.
She was 18.
I mean, I should say, right? If you enjoy it and you're over 15, you can watch it.
Yeah, you can watch it, just don't enjoy it.
I'm really uncomfortable right now.
Yeah,
if you're over 15, watch this movie. I guarantee you'll hate it.
All right, Matt, swings us into your number two.
You know, I'm pulling out a strange one. Have you guys ever heard of a movie called Last Summer? No, dude, don't ring that bell. It's called Last Summer. It's an indie gem. It's Barbara Hershey's, I think, her film debut. I could be wrong. It's like, I'll get the exact year, but it's about kids who are pretty much on the beach with their, you know, their folks aren't in the film, but they have this misadventure and everything goes wrong, and it's about the bad decisions that you can make when hormones are kicking in. And there's nobody to tell you no. It's actually kind of a disturbing film, but it's an art house pick.
Hey, Matt, I don't know you that well, but I'm pretty sure you just made that up.
we're looking at IMDb right now.
No, I'm telling you, man, last summer.
There's nothing on IMDb. He's on it right now. Yeah. I see nothing.
Zero.
Is this a film that you made with your family when you were nine?
No, no.
Home videos, Matt?
I'm Googling it. All right? It's such a
because
deep...
that sounds like something that, like, when my mom makes home videos, she would label the VHS Last Summer.
Okay,
last
I'll summer. Tell you. I'll tell you exactly. I'll tell you exactly how I got into this movie. All right, and I'm not. No shame here. When I was a kid, I used to try to, stay up late and watch Skinamax.
Don't
remember
do it,
Skinamax?
Matt. Don't do it, Matt.
No, I'm just laying this out. I'm laying this out.
When you were a kid, at 28.
No, like early teens. Okay. Before the internet, folks. So we would just pop a tape in our VCR. And I was actually one of those few people that knew how to program their VCRs. So I would just record Skinamax, get it in the morning, and watch whatever was recorded. And usually it would be some fantastic TNA movie. This one night, it happened to be last summer.
You didn't stay up for it? You recorded it?
I just recorded
it in the morning?
Yeah.
Well, like when Saturday cartoons were on?
No. I would watch it at night.
I
would watch it the next...
creepy.
Anyway.
I would have stayed up.
Stay with me here. So...
Couldn't you just said it? I used to watch Cinemax.
I know. And that's it. All right. It swings us into our number ones.
Whoa, TMI.
All right. Swings us into our number ones. We'll continue on sometime with that one, Matt.
Hey, last summer, though, was a pleasant surprise. I was expecting something else, but I got a great movie, and I keep watching it. It's good.
Is there any TNA, at least?
None.
All right.
You still watch our VHS?
But I watched it all the way through just to make sure.
You just sold that movie on me to avoid it forever.
All right.
It's on IMDb, 1969.
Right. Oh, boy. Oh. Hey, swings us into our number ones. And my number one, the first time I saw this one was on Skidamax. It's called Emmanuel Goes to the Beach. No, I'm kidding. My number one, this is also, it's a small film. Came out in 2002. Whale Rider. Anyone?
That was watchable.
Yes.
Sure.
That's got Keisha Castle Hughes. She's part of this, the Maori people down in New Zealand. It's basically part straight story, part mystical fable about the rituals that take place in their tribe, and they don't have a new leader to go to because it's supposed to be the oldest male, but her twin brother died during birth, as did her mother, and they think it's family is not going to give way to the new leader. She says that she can become the whale rider. And beautiful film. The music in this movie, the cinematography, and the performance by Keisha Castle Hughes, unbelievable. She was nominated. She became the youngest nominee for Best Actress in the category at the age of 12. Fantastic, fantastic movie. Whale Rider, if you haven't seen it. That's my number one. Can you top it there, John?
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin.
No.
I'll give you, I'll co-sign that with you.
Really? Because I'll tell you this. My number one, I don't even need to say the name of the movie. It's like, Donna, 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 Donna. Come on.
Yes. Well, it's a terrible imitation of Jaws.
Well, it's a terrible. I've got a cold.
Is that last summer?
Jaws is the best beach movie ever. Are you kidding me? It starts out with a campfire on the beach. This guy chases this girl off. She goes into the water. They shoot day for night. She gets eaten by a shark that we never see. I mean, it's genius. Jaws. I don't know. I don't know what you guys are thinking. Number one.
No, all time.
I agree with you. I wasn't putting it on my list because, obviously, I think a lot of people were going to say Jaws and think Jaws was beach. But I'm glad it was mentioned. It's a worthy number one, John.
And I have to agree with you, John, because it's also my number one.
All right.
Oh, we got
a couple of number ones. Thank you.
Matt's got number one Jaws. John's got number one Jaws. I got Whale Rider. Justin, you're left. What do you got?
I just want to say about Jaws, I think it's a pretty solid piece of cinema, but it doesn't hold a special place in my heart because I wasn't born in the 70s or in the 60s like John was, so it wasn't part of my youth like it was for his. Anyway.
You could watch it on late night HBO.
Skidamax, perhaps. Go on.
So obviously my number one was Point Break because I love anything Keanu Reeves does. But my my number two became my number one, and that's going to be this is kind of, I don't know, this doesn't seem like a number one, but how about Police Academy 5, signed Miami Beach?
Wait, what, dude? What?
Don't you remember it's definitely the best of the Police Academies.
He started this out with, I wasn't born in the 70s. Police Academy came out in like what, like 80?
Oh,
like,
ladies.
So you saw 3, 4, and 5, but you didn't see the first two?
Because don't you remember Commandant Lasard and he's got a nephew and then he has a goldfish?
Just stop.
What are you doing? You should just said riffraff, man. You should have said,
but they really steal riff-raff. The goldfish.
Riffraff.
And the cops
number
got
one
the diamonds
movie.
And bat. Never mind.
Justin's off his meds. Riffraff, best beach movie.
Oh, this
After
is
Jaws.
Fantastic. This is fantastic. Real quick, a couple of great beach scenes before we go to break here. Planet of the Apes, obviously. Warriors, the end of Warriors on the beach.
Oh, yeah, Coney Island.
Oh,
come
fantastic.
Great movie. Great movie.
And my favorite.
How come nobody had that? John, how come you didn't have that one on your
Top Gun, man.
Not really beach movies.
Top Gun.
My favorite beach scene in a movie, though, comes to us from Karate Kid, Ralph Macchio style. When they come on with the dirt bikes, they break a radio. Just great. Just break my radio.
That's a great beach party. I will say that. That's my, like, dream beach party.
No doubt.
Little karate, some hot blondes. Yeah.
And then they leave them there in the sand, and they're like, you sure pick cool friends to hang out with, Freddie. And they just leave poor Ralph Macchio beat up in the sand.
Well, he's got Dancing
he
with the Stars.
And he does that stuff with Miyagi on the beach, too, with the standing on the pole. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is a beach movie.
It is. It's a beach movie.
That should have been somebody's number one.
Absolutely.
That's solid.
That's got more beach scenes than all of John's top five combined.
Jaws.
I got a quick honorable.
Jaws.
I can't believe this didn't come up. Club Paradise, 1986. It was directed by Harold Ramis, Robin Williams, Peter O'Toole, Rick Moranis, Jimmy Cliff.
Wow. Great one.
Yeah. Done.
All right. Hey, listen, we're going to take a break. We come back. We got a couple DVD reviews for you, Win-Win and the Beaver, plus Matt versus Justin in trivia, and a new segment we call
Cinema War.
We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a Cinema Jaw movie fact. Concerning the movie Jaws, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts was used as Amity Island, primarily because even 12 miles out to sea, the sandy bottom was only 30 feet down, allowing the mechanical shark Bruce to function. Residents were paid $64 to scream and run across the beach as extras. And that is your Cinema Jaw movie fact.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw. Again, we're sitting in with John Otterbacher and Justin Naughton. They have the DVD release on September 8th at the Original Mothers of Riff Raff. Check out this film.
Yeah, please join us at Mothers if you're in Chicago.
Yeah, and if you're not, check out riffraffthemovie.com. You can buy a DVD right on the website, which is awesome. Before we get to trivia, and the kids are going back to school, so we have school movie trivia coming up. Ooh. Justin between Matt Kay. Before we get to that, we have a segment we call
Cinema War.
Cinema War.
And it works a little like this. Me and Matt are going to debate a subject, and Justin, you're our guest coming to us via Skype from Los Angeles. You put on the judge's cloak there at your house and judge who wins this debate between me and Matt Kay, all right? And Reno, what's the topic for today's Cinema War?
Today's Cinema War topic: should Hollywood keep making American versions of foreign films? Matt, you'll be fighting that they should. Rye, you'll be fighting they should not. Let the cinema war begin.
All right, Matt. There is no reason to remake an American version of a quality film from another country. Subtitles are not that difficult. And now, English dubbing is being included on almost all DVDs from foreign films. Just for the lazies. There's no reason to do it, Matt.
Okay. Dubbing is substandard. And let's face it, by and large, Americans don't like subtitles. It's not that we're lazy, but subtitles can be distracting. And when I'm watching a movie, I want to do just that. Watch a movie. If I wanted to read a book, I would read a book.
Ooh, Matt. Yep. You lose something, Matt, from the culture that the film comes from. You're always better off to seek out the original foreign film than to see the American version. So many times it will not translate well.
A film is a piece of art at the core of which is a story. It's important for good stories to be told, so why not make a good story as accessible as possible? Some highly acclaimed movies were American versions of foreign films. Let's not restrict these ideas to only one culture.
Oh, come on, Matt. Foreign films open up your mind to more cultures, to see that they are making cutting-edge stories elsewhere in the world. This is a chance for the viewer to learn something and be entertained at the same time.
All right. Let's just talk about it. The Dragon in the Room, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo remakes. There's a lot of controversy about that right now, but you know that you are going to see it, Rye. Admit it. You're going to go see that movie.
No, I'm not, Matt, because I'm mad at it. Let me tell you this. In 1958, the film Touch of Evil, a tan Charlton Heston played a Mexican. Is that what we want to go back to? A time when only American actors are used in American productions? No. Seeing the world from the eyes of a different culture is an aspect that makes movies so magical. Film, Matt, is the language of the world.
All right.
Touch of Evil's good.
I mentioned some acclaimed movies, okay? How about The Birdcage, The Ring, Cousins, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Mixed Nuts, Scent of a Woman, Three Men and a Baby, The Toy with Richard Pryor, The Grudge, and 12 Monkeys. How would your life be, Rye, if you had missed any of those movies? I guarantee several of those are among your favorites, none of which you are probably aware were American remakes.
Tough crowd here, Matt. Tough crowd. We throw it over to Justin, our judge this week. Justin, you got to pick a winner between me and Matt. Who do you agree with here?
I gotta say I lean toward Ryan more.
Yes.
You gotta make a decision. Is that your decision?
that's my decision.
All right.
Is that all I say?
Nice.
Is any kick it to John or can I have my talking
points? Where's my say?
Well, right, no, John, you get a say.
Go ahead. What were you gonna say though, Justin?
I was gonna say that I've lived in Europe before and there's certain countries in Europe that do dubbing and other countries of American films. And there are certain countries in Europe. I guess it's a different topic, though, because you started on talking about dubbing versus subtitles. But, like, the Western countries in Europe, they do the dubbing, and it's the worst thing possible to see an American film dubbed in their language, which is what I can imagine from their country's films. Like, a French person seeing a French film dubbed in English has got to be just embarrassing. So I'm definitely not down with the dubbing. As far as taking a film and remaking it with an American audience, I don't think it's a terrible idea, but with the one we're talking about is The Dragon Tattoo. That's a film that's based in Sweden, and it was shot and made with people speaking Swedish, obviously. So to remake it, if you're going to make it Americanized, that's one thing. But they're going over there and they're filming the exact same movie. They're just doing it in English. So I think it's a separation of just like if you do it the right way, it can be done. But for the most part, I just think that most Americans should just watch more foreign films. There's some really good films that are missing because they don't want to watch subtitles, and that's just being lazy and, you know, and most people seen are retarded anyway.
I agree with you, Justin. John, what were you going to say?
Well, you know, in filmmaking, we have this concept of suspension of disbelief, right? We go see a movie, and we forget we're watching a movie. We just experience it. As soon as I have to read,
yes,
I am consciously reading and I'm not just experiencing the film anymore. So I don't want to take anything away from foreign films. I think there's some amazing foreign films and I will watch them in their native tongue. But if I want to go and just purely immerse myself in the experience, reading is not part of the process. If I have to read, it reminds me that I'm watching a movie and it takes me out of that. So I totally agree with Justin. I think that dubbing is a mistake. I would rather either A, watch it in the original language and then rewatch it again once I know what they're saying. So I watch it once, I read it, and then I watch it again and not read it as much because I already know what's happening. or watch it in English. You know, a good remake is good. I mean, there's some terrible remakes as well. Let's be honest. But if it's done well, a good remake can be a good thing.
Well, I'm glad that Justin agreed with me. And the Jawheads listening to this at home, if you're near Twitter, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw and let us know what you think. Should they make Americanized movies of great foreign films? Shoot us a tweet.
Yeah. Sensible Woman. It's a remake.
All right. Hey, before we get to trivia, really quick, a couple of DVD reviews for you. Win-win. Paul Giamatti plays a small-town lawyer and a wrestling coach in this new comedy/drama on DVD. His high school wrestling team, Matt, has not won a match all year, but that changes when Kyle, a runaway teenager, arrives in his life. Kyle is the grandson of one of Giamatti's clients. He takes Kyle in and enrolls him in school. At this point, we see how each character is affected by their new relationships. This is a very original script. It has plenty of humor and at the same time gives us a touching drama. Both Paul Giamatti and Amy Ryan are excellent in this film. Give it a spin. Ride the Movie Guy's grade. 3.5 Jaws, a grade of a B+ for win-win.
Nice. Good review.
Gotta check this one out, John.
Yeah, I love Amy Ryan. What she did last year in The Fighter was amazing, so I'd check it out based on that alone.
Yeah, it's one of the best reviewed films on Rotten Tomato for the year. It's out on DVD. It's called Win-Win. Check that one out. The other one I rented, Matt, was a film that you had recommended from the adult film section called The Beaver.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Actually, no, Matt. This is Mel Gibson.
It's Last Summer?
No, this is...
The Naughty Otter?
Yeah. The Beaver, Mel Gibson stars in this Jodie Foster-directed film as a man in deep depression. Early on, we see the effects this has on his wife, played by Foster. She does sort of dual duty here. And also his two kids, one who is very young and the other who is in high school. After being pushed to the brink, Gibson finds a friend that can help him out of his depression. A beaver hand puppet. He talks through the beaver as if it's another person. But this gets him talking and thinking again. This is a very bold film that could have went very, very wrong if not in the right hands. Foster and Gibson both do a great job with this, but it still feels a bit off at times and not deep enough with the short runtime of 91 minutes considering the topic we're dealing with. Ride the Movie Guy's great on this. 2.75 Jaws, B-C+ territory.
I kind of wanted to see this, actually.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah.
No, I just, Mel Gibson has really turned me off, you know? I mean, Jodie Foster, yeah. I like, but Mel Gibson, you know, Crazy Train is has left, and oh, I'm not on it.
Oh, yes.
And I agree with you. While I was watching the film, John, I thought to myself, a few years earlier, that I might have even enjoyed this a little bit more than I currently do, because I have this, like, mixed emotions watching Gibson. Even though it was a good performance, just feels sort of odd watching him now.
Yeah, you know, he was a little angry, a little hateful, and it taints watching them. Same thing with Tom Cruise right now. You know, you watch a Tom Cruise movie, you think, oh, kind of crazy, and it takes you out of the movie for a second. You're thinking about Tom Cruise, and that's not the point of seeing movies, you know?
All right, so it brings us to trivia this week. Matt K versus Justin in school movie trivia. The kids are going back to school. What better time than to do school movie trivia?
And I'm going to be taking Justin to school right now.
Now, let me remind the Jawheads at home.
Teach school.
Let me remind the Jawheads at home. Matt K is 13-14 on the year. He is one win under 500. Justin, let's not let him get there, okay?
I will do my best.
All right. So it works like this. Go back and forth. There are steals, and you do have one lifeline. Our wonderful producer, Steve Mrazek, will help you out with a clue. Justin, you're our guest. You get to choose. Do you want to go first or let Matt K go first?
Let him go first.
All right.
It's a show.
All right.
And just so you know, the iPad is off, and I won't be using any of the internet here in front of me for answers.
All right. Question number one over to Matt K.
For you.
School movie trivia, Matt. In 1995, this actor played Mr. Holland in Mr. Holland's Opus.
Richard Dreyfuss.
1-0, Matt K. You should have went first, Justin. Question number two, over to Justin.
I can see him sweating.
This 2004 film saw Lindsay Lohan and Rachel McAdams team up, while Tina Fey played one of their teachers.
Mean Girls.
Nice.
1-1. Question number three, over to Matt K. What subject did Ben Stein teach in Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Algebra.
He is wrong on that one. Which one? You do have a lifeline if you don't want to answer right away.
He wants to steal it, I think.
Yeah,
it's over to you, yeah.
Yeah, you could steal.
History?
Are you saying history?
Yeah.
Damn.
We were looking for economics. Voodoo Ooh. Economics.
Wow.
That's the class?
Jeez. Yes.
It's a little closer to history. 99% history is economics.
Hey, it's 1-1, and this question's over to you, Justin. In School of Rock, Jack Black played the rock teacher, but who played the principal of the school?
Joan Cusack. Ooh!
He's rolling. It's 2-1, Justin. This clue is over to Matt Kay. In the high school film Clueless, Alicia Silverstone plays Cher. What actor played her stepbrother in the movie?
Nice. Nice. Clueless is fantastic.
You do have a lifeline.
No. It's
short on
Rescue
time here,
me,
Matt.
Reno. Rescue me, Reno.
Rescue me, Reno. Question number 5 in Clueless. Who played Alicia Silverstone's stepbrother in the movie?
I keep wanting to say Josh Brolin, and it's not even close. I use my lifeline.
And your clue is, I love you, man, actor.
I love you, man, actor.
Justin Bateman.
You got a chance for a steal right here, Justin.
All right.
Word. Okay.
Nice. Well done. It is 3-1, Justin, and this clue is over to him. What kind of alcohol does Emma Stone's character ask for in Superbad?
I don't know.
You do, you do have a lifeline.
It's 3-1. It's 3-2, right?
3-1.
3-1.
Oof.
Let's go with tequila.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal. What alcohol does Emma Stone's character ask for in Superbad?
I'll just take a guess. Vodka? Sweet.
Oh,
Gold Slick Vodka, to be specific. It is 3-2, and this question is over to Matt. What is the name of the school in Greece?
Rydell.
Oh, come on.
Yes! Right back in it.
3-3. It's the last question of the game. It's over to Justin. For the win, Justin. This 1991 high school film had the characters named Ricky, Trey, and Doughboy. Directed by John Singleton.
Wait, so what were the first two?
This 1991 high school film had the characters named Ricky, Trey, and Doughboy. It was directed by John Singleton.
John Singleton.
Wait, what was the second one? You're breaking up.
Ricky, Trey, and Doughboy.
Oh. Boys in the Hood.
They're always hard.
We got a winner. Justin wins this thing 4-3.
Yeah. All right.
Well done.
He's doing a little victory lap right now.
He's doing a dance. It's fantastic. There was a jawbreaker. There was a jawbreaker in case there was a tie. Better Winona Ryder high school film, Edward Scissorhands or Heathers?
Heathers.
I was going with Heathers, yeah.
Heathers. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Cuba Gooding Jr., closest to. 45 from John. Matt, what do you say?
Cuba Gooding?
Yeah.
No, he's not that old. I'll say 42.
42? Justin, what do you say?
Yeah, I'll go with like 44.
Eh, what the heck? We're giving it to Justin. 43.
Oh, one.
Hey, wait, closest to without going over.
No!
It was me. It was me.
Oh, man. Well, hey, Justin wins this one 4-3. Well done. Before we blow out of here, one Hollywood headline each, Matt.
Yeah, sounds good. Hey, you go first.
Get a load of this. Cameron Crowe puts Say Anything sequel rumors to bed, although he does say we might see the characters again. He says, and I quote, "I remember those characters as I keep thinking that there's more that I could write about them. Not just Lloyd. If anything, it would be a side character or some story where they were some kind of linkage."
How could you do another Say Anything and not write about Lloyd?
It'd be fun to see another character.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
What do you got, Matt?
Roger Ebert is the most important film critic in history. When asked by Men's Health who the ultimate critic would choose to play him in a movie about himself, Ebert picked Academy Award winner Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Ooh, nice pick. Philip Seymour Hoffman is Roger Ebert. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Gene Siskel could be played by Stanley Tucci.
I could see it.
You good?
Yeah, that's good casting.
Yeah, good casting.
The name of the movie would be Thumbs Up.
That's a little obvious.
It's a little stretch.
A little stretch.
Yeah. It's obvious.
And 8 people would watch it.
Yeah. And it would probably get bad reviews.
Except from Ebert.
It would get awful reviews.
All right, so it brings us to the end of another great Cinema Jaw here. Once again, want to thank John and Justin, the creator, the producer, the writer-director from Riff Raff. They got their DVD party September 8th at Mother's. Be there, and you can't buy the DVD at riffrafftemovie.com.
Yeah, we should say Mother's is 26 West Division Street, and the doors open at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, this is a totally free screening. You know, it's end of the summer. Hoping to get some lifeguards in there, people that are excited about Riff Raff. Buy the DVD, check out the poster. But more importantly, just come out. It's a free screening. Have a good time. That's what Riff Raff is all about, you know, having a good time end of summer.
Awesome. So thanks again, Justin. Thanks, John, for coming on. Want to thank our sponsors, PBR, the new 400 Theaters,
Evil Squirrel Comics.
And also thanks to our wonderful producer, Steve Mrazek.
The best in the biz.
Absolutely. So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.